Good evening and welcome to Tangerine Dream Team this week. I'm Coral Reef, and in the studio are two guests that I will introduce. We'll be discussing the plutonium issue, the nuclear fallout, different nuclear plants, what's going on as we speak, and the political, governmental, and spiritual solutions that we may have to look at. So, welcome. I want to say hello to Jim Ostrowski and Tony Cuspa.
Hello.
Hi.
Tell us about yourselves, either one of you. I've interviewed Tony before and also Jim.
Well, if you want me to start off, Carl, my name's Jim Ostrowski, and I've been on here before, as you mentioned, discussing various technical things related to medical electronics. I build medical electronic instruments for a living, and I have a couple of Geiger counters I brought with me today to maybe perhaps illustrate some of the technical details involving radiation monitoring and what we could do to detect radiation in our homes and our environment.
How sensitive are your instruments, and what can you tell us how they can show what's been going on since Fukushima,
well,
especially?
The two instruments that I brought with me today vary widely in sensitivity. One is based on the Russian SVM-20 Geiger-Müller tube. And the other one is based on the smaller one. I can't remember the serial number of it right offhand. However, they vary in size. The two tubes vary in size. One is about an inch in length and perhaps a centimeter in diameter. You see it's blinking every now and then. The blue light will flash. And detecting a random radioactive event. What it is a impact of a nuclear particle, a radioactive particle from more than likely perhaps some radon in the area or a cosmic ray. The other one is based on, as I mentioned, the Russian Geiger-Müller tube. It's much more sensitive and will get many more counts per minute, and is used for areas where you have a low background and they're trying to detect radioactivity that might be at a low level, contaminating perhaps a small area that you're trying to of interest, such as a tabletop. You'll get an increased reaction from a granite tabletop because those have some inherent radioactivity. And perhaps it's useful in detecting radiation in drinking water and in some cases food. Food is much more difficult to detect because it's low level and it's somewhat indistinguishable from the normal background in a lot of cases. So you'd have to isolate to properly test this. You'd have to isolate the food item in with some lead to detect the possibility of radiation from your food.
Our call-in number is 469-3119, and you're listening to the Tangerine Dream Team show. If you have questions, and also you could email right now at coralrock@rockmail.com and ask any question you have maybe about nuclear power or if you have any comments.
Do you have any questions so far?
Yeah.
I have one that'll might move things along a little. Just before the program, you said if that handheld black instrument, which looks kind of like a cell phone to me, if it flashes a couple times a minute, that means you're in a dangerous place?
Not necessarily. You can see this one. This one has has a counter. And this is the larger one, the more sensitive unit, corresponds roughly to the to the smaller unit, about 10 to 1. So in other words, we'll get a count here. It looks like we're right now at about a minute in, and we have about 86 counts. So I would say right now, this is about the same level that I'm finding in my home. This will be maybe once or twice a minute, where this will go several times per minute, usually in the range of 20 to 35 to 40, perhaps 40 in extreme cases, counts per minute. So the model here, and I'm not, and didn't want to really emphasize the abilities of the counter so much as what the what to do with them and how, and what the differences are, and you know, what you should expect out of any Geiger counter that you get commercially. These two I built from kits, and they're relatively inexpensive.
Well, so, I'm going to be asking some questions that other people may have, because I want to buy one and I want to be able to check the air and water and possibly food, but I heard you say it's difficult to check food.
Right, because of the, well, for example, bananas have potassium 40 in them. Even they have natural potassium in them, and that's radioactive. And unfortunately, we haven't gotten to the level of technical intricacy that would be involved in a thing called a scintillation counter that you would, that would enable you to detect very low levels in food. We kind of have to rely right now on, can't rely on the EPA because they stopped testing. The University of California, Berkeley Nuclear Engineering Department has tested tap water, various leafy vegetables, and rainwater. And
I noticed they tested arugula. So they're taking care of the elites before they're taking us. Care of us people down here who don't use arugula, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm glad you're familiar with that.
The one problem I have, though, Jim, is that I heard that France had already told people to avoid leafy vegetables and dairy products.
Yeah.
And you know, I relate that to the fact that they have single payer, or they pay for the medical costs of their people, so they're being extra careful to try to cut down on the amounts of cancers and stuff that you might get. Now, before the program started, I heard a woman say, the cancers rates are going crazy all over. And you know, that sounds a bit apocryphal. But we hear things like, that we see online, 14,000% increase in radioactivity in San Francisco rainwater, for instance. Yeah. The radioactivity in milk in Oakland is four times the danger level. So I don't know what all this means, and I'm hoping that by getting a Geiger counter, I might be able to help myself understand that.
Yeah, having a Geiger counter really isn't the answer. I thought that at first myself when when Fukushima was happening, as far as the initial explosions that weekend, I decided I better get something. And by the time the weekend was over, most of the places selling Geiger counters were out of stock. The only places that had them were where I can get kits, and then I, since I'm in the business already of, you know, making various medical instruments from available parts from the industry, I got these two, and they're quite effective in monitoring air quality. And I produced a graph over a period of just about 3 months what the radioactivity was like. Right after the Fukushima accident, or if you want to call it that, and on through the middle of May or so.
You mentioned the University of California at Berkeley.
Yes.
And I noticed that they are tracking five or six of the fallout products. Cesium, strontium. There's two versions of radioactive strontium that we're getting, which goes into our bones because the body thinks strontium is calcium.
Right.
So we're loaded with strontium anyway, but there is a good strontium, and then there's the two evil sisters that are radioactive and coming at us from Japan. Then you have plutonium, which is handled by the body like iron. We have receptors on every human cell, apparently, that grabs onto plutonium, takes it, and throws it into our genitals or into our reproductive system and into our marrow, which makes it different from other kinds of just run-of-the-mill stuff that isn't handled by the body like a needed nutritional thing.
Right. So the bottom line is that there are and have been radionuclides in our atmosphere since the time of the nuclear testing. I don't have much data, but the nuclear testing in the 60s of atom bombs and hydrogen bombs, as I understand it, there were over 250 atomic and hydrogen explosions or thermonuclear explosions during the atomic test period of the early 50s through the late 60s. I couldn't find any data of what the background radiation was before all these tests. So all we have to go on right now is the data we have immediately after the Fukushima explosions. Now, I brought a graph with me, and we can see that, right after the explosions, we had a peak. And then it's been coming in waves ever since. In other words, it'll go down to a minimum. And then it seems to be tapering off towards the end of the graph here.
What do you mean by minimum?
Minimum is the lowest counts per minute in the case of this particular graph in the chart, which goes from late March, March 25th, through the end of May, May 25th or so. We've had fluctuations in a minimum count of, it looks like 11 counts per minute, to a maximum on April 2nd, or March 30th, a maximum of about 48. So we had that wide a range, and then it's been, since then, the peaks haven't been that great or that high. Our peaks have been right around 36 to 38 counts per minute, and our minimums, when it subsides after, it seems to cycle every 7 to 11 days, so the minimum has been at a low of about 12 to 19 counts per minute when it's in the so it's troughs and valleys, or peaks and valleys rather.
You have a medical background, apparently.
No, no? I have an electronics background. I work with a doctor.
Okay. Well, what I'm interested in is how close that minimum is to zero, because the minimums don't mean much to me when I'm finding out that I'm taking in that minimum with every single breath.
Yeah, and also you're getting bombarded by the ambient radiation, which is either in the ground or particulate matter that's in the atmosphere that's either left over from all of these nuclear tests that took place in the 60s, 50s and 60s, and any nuclear waste that's been ejected into the atmosphere from nuclear power plants up to now. So all we're really seeing now is what's in addition to that. Since the Fukushima, which is a monumental amount of radioactivity, plutonium particles launched in the atmosphere. My understanding is, and I'm not a nuclear physicist, I'm not a nuclear engineer, but other nuclear engineers are saying each of us are now breathing 10 hot particles per day as a result of this.
Okay, well, that coincides with what I'm saying. Yeah. Now, on previous programs, at least two of them, I mentioned the fact that Linus Pauling won his second Nobel Peace Prize because he predicted a spike in leukemia in children as a result of one series of United States and Russian tests during 1 year. And when Khrushchev and Kennedy saw that he was not only accurate, but he had understated the peak by like 30, he was only 30% accurate. It was much more. Mm-hmm. They immediately signed a test ban treaty within months.
Right.
So there must be data from his work which relates illnesses to a certain amount of plutonium in the air, or not any kind of fallout in the air.
Yeah, there's the typical way that the best way to gather information about your immediate environment is after a rainfall. And what some of the Japanese are doing, they have a kind of an ad hoc variation of this test. You gather rainwater in a tarp and then let it accumulate and filter down, not filter, well, the rainwater accumulates in the slope and the tarp gets to the bottom, and then it goes through a filter and you evaluate or test with your Geiger counter the residual radiation in the filter. And so by that method, we are noticing a slight increase over the background level. If you test the background level previously as a control and see what you're getting on a particular day today, it was fairly low. We had a count of approximately, I don't think I actually did the math here on it, but it was in the average of around 20 to 25 right now. As I mentioned, we had peaks up as high as 48. So the best way to do it is to actually filter as much of the radiation as you can, or trap it as much as you can into a filter. The Japanese have an ad hoc version of that where they just take the rainwater that comes off of their roof, goes down the downspout in the gutter, and they take their Geiger counter where the downspout hits the ground and measure that, and measure it right at the ground level.
I don't remember where I heard it, but there seems to be a folk discussion out there at the street level of air filters in cars being a good indication of where the hot spots are. It'd be nice if we could just walk into dealerships and take samplings of the air filters in the cars that they're working on.
I recently heard that, and I think the fellow who originated that was our friend Arnie Gunderson, who's a whistleblower on this.
Another one is Mr. Gunter. Paul Gunter, have you seen his site? He's supposedly not ethicist, but bioengineering person. And when he was asked by Tom Hartman on a show about a month ago, they were discussing conditions in Japan, which were pretty bad. People were moving out of Tokyo in droves. There aren't any foreigners around Tokyo, apparently, to speak of. And he said, Paul, who's a man, younger than you, and you get him by just saying Paul Gunter, and you get his site. And he's studying the entire problem worldwide. He said, Paul, if you were living around Tokyo, he said, where would you go to? He said, Tom, there's no place to go. And he meant the northern hemisphere, apparently, the southern
hemisphere. There's nowhere to run. Yeah, that's the situation, sadly, and it doesn't appear to me that they're doing as much as humanly possible. We had in the Russian situation, the Chernobyl disaster or that incident, we had a mobilization of up to 800,000 people in order to burrow underneath the Chernobyl reactor to prevent the meltdown from reaching their aquifer. Fortunately for them, they didn't have to. What their plan was to do was to actually put liquid nitrogen under the reactor where the meltdown, in order to cool it enough so that it would solidify by the time it got to the water table.
Well, related to that information is the fact that the Russians are taking bids on building a new containment vessel over the top at Chernobyl, that the exclusionary zone is growing every single year, and that the victims of Chernobyl meet every single year, and the body count so far was 982,000, expected to go over a million at the next meeting. And I heard a kind of a crying voice of an old Russian soldier who said, they told us it wasn't going to harm us. We only went in for 90 seconds per person, and we have all these problems with our families with the birth defects and things.
Yeah, that's unfortunately correct. But as I was going to mention, to compare that effort of 800,000 people who were forced to go in other words, it was their duty.
They were soldiers.
They were soldiers. To spend their 90 seconds, in some cases I've heard it's up to 12 minutes.
Wow.
And depending on the area and the job. But we have the situation in... other odd thing is the radiation suits that they had seemed much more durable than what the Fukushima folks are wearing. Apparently, I just learned this last night, that those radiation prevention outfits that they're wearing are only good for... they don't shield any of the ambient radiation. All they do is prevent any particles from getting on their skin or into their...
I love that talk, ambient. When I was working at Vandenberg Air Force Base, Dr. Richard Richards, who was a telemetry expert, had a friend who told the story that they were decommissioning radioactive nuclear subs up at the Washington base, and they wanted to find a volunteer truck driver to take a load of brass off of this sub on a flatbed truck and drive it as fast as he could down to around 7 miles away from Vegas into a trench. And that man volunteered. He got a lot of money, drove the thing right in there, jumped out, ran like hell, and he was dead in 6 months from cancer of the spleen.
No kidding. Wow.
And Richard says that the calculation was that, to give you an idea how hot fuel rods are, put one across the road and ride it right over it with a motorcycle, and you're a dead man.
Oh, no kidding.
If you rode right over at 90 yeah. miles an hour. That was his calculation. So that's what we're talking about, ambient. You don't have to receive particles.
Yeah.
You just receive the radiation, and it cooks you like a microwave, I guess.
Right. And unfortunately, it appears from all the information that I can gather is the problem isn't so much the reactor cores that are melting into the Earth. It is the spent fuel pools at reactor number 4. Reactor number 4 has stored fuel pools that appears to be either leaking or boiling off. And every now and then, they have to refill the spent fuel pool, and they've had to prop up the building with external, I guess, hydraulics in order to keep the building supported. And it seems about every 72 to... anywhere from 48 to 72 hours, they have to refill the spent fuel pool, and that's going to be kept up for forever.
I'm told that the spent fuel pools were shaped like this, and they were staging pools. After you stored all your waste up above the nuclear reactor, some weird design, mm-hmm. and after they degrade it to a certain point, you put them all into this H-shaped thing, mm-hmm. and that has been exposed various times completely to air, which means they have like maybe. That's where you get your 20,000 nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
Because this stuff is much more hot than and three of these have completely melted down. Mm-hmm. But there's more fuel in the storage.
Yeah, so the situation is very dire. We have to take it seriously. And what we're seeing now from the corporatocracy, as it's been called now, is that their response is all based on the monetary considerations rather than national emergency.
Daniel Quayle's Committee on Affordability of Protection.
Yes.
In other words, if it wasn't affordable, we didn't protect anybody.
Right, exactly. So the question is, where do we go from here? And I'm open to suggestions.
Well, I'd like to hear your suggestions.
Okay.
Well, my suggestion at first was we should have panicked. I mean, Dr. Don Motika is a local doctor who said, don't panic. Don't worry about any of this stuff because panic is dangerous. Well, I emailed her and stopped listening to her, and I said, Dr. Motika, more lives have been saved by panic than by lack of it. Uh-huh. We have an amygdala part of our brain which is designed to panic us and get us the hell out of danger even before we recognize the danger, whether it's true or not. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying the farmers could have started covering their crops with this green to keep the fallout from hitting the plants. Or we could start buying a lot of our stuff from south of the equator.
Mm-hmm.
Just panic and do what's right for the people. Yeah. Have single-payer medical so that we know what's going on. We know where the hot spots are. Because there are hot spots in Japan, like 25 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, cesium collected in this small town.
Yeah.
About a month ago, and people were told, well, you're not in real danger, but if you move out, plan on never coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting the way they've put this seem to be concentric circles around the plant saying that, okay, so if you get this far, you're in less danger than if you are close to the plant, and then this out of the side of this circle, you're somehow safe, when they've thrown plots where a lot of this radiation is simply blown where the wind blows. And wherever it happens to deposit the particles is where it's dangerous, and unfortunately, all those particles are in populated areas near Fukushima City, of all places, which is one of the closest large towns adjacent to the nuclear power plants. That town is still occupied, and they have no evacuation plans whatsoever for them.
I heard an interview 2 weeks ago with a teacher who taught 14-year-olds, and he didn't wear a mask all the time, but he guaranteed to us, to the people, that his students all wear masks all the time, mm-hmm. that he advised them never to go outside, to stay all indoors as much as they can unless they have to go outside. And when they go outside, they'd be masked and covered up. And they wear masks all day during class.
Yeah.
And the stupid NPR reporter asked, is it harder to teach people when they're wearing masks? And he said, are you an idiot? Yeah. Sure, it's more difficult. So they're going through some real changes there in Fukushima City, but there will be, I'm sure there will be illnesses there as a result of all that stuff that they're doing.
One other thing that, one other problem that I've run across that, that hasn't been mentioned on even, or very rarely on the internet, is the software called Stuxnet, S-T-U-X-N-E-T. This is the software that is used to integrate the function of any fluid control plant, such as oil refineries, dams, and nuclear power plants. This is software that is apparently you're able to log into some kind of secure internet, if there is any such thing. But there is a possibility that I haven't yet thoroughly evaluated, and I'm not an expert at evaluating, and I do would like some help on with this. If anybody, any of your callers out there are familiar, or listeners are familiar with this software, but apparently the Stuxnet software it was designed to help control nuclear power plants from a remote location. So we have a centralized system that might be able to control all nuclear power plants at some point. You have upgrades for the older plants that are supposedly have no connection to the internet. If the one thing we know that the internet is vulnerable to is viruses, and if this there's a fellow called Jim Stone, JimStoneFreelance.com. His thesis is that the Fukushima disaster was caused by sabotage, and it's possible that this was integrated into this the Stuxnet software in order to prevent or to give a warning to Japan that they were not to do business with Iran in providing them with enriched uranium fuel. Now, if this is this is true, if there is a central entity controlling all the nuclear power plants, what we have is a theater of landmines that are spread out across the world. That is in its essentials, we are already involved in World War III.
I agree, but it's suicidal for someone to get involved in shutting down nuclear, because there's no way of predicting what's going to happen.
You would think so, yes.
But I guess certain people are suicidal. I mean, we're pretty suicidal ourselves.
Did see the movie Dr. Strangelove, perhaps? I mean, it's
and
part
I saw
of the culture.
The movie, the Academy Award-winning movie, China Syndrome.
Right, but this, the theme behind Dr. Strangelove is that these folks have it all planned out ahead of time. They have a place to hide underground.
I don't know. Well, I saw the movie several times, and they were planning on maybe having a place to hide, you know, 10 women to every man.
Right.
But
that was
I didn't get the idea that it was actually in place. But I wouldn't be surprised if they had something like that already.
Yeah. That's it. That's their ace, their so-called ace in the hole. They have a place to go when the stuff hits the fan. Okay.
Yeah, but we have Obama, who's supporting nuclear power in the face of all these disasters, and he's got two young daughters that he says he spends an hour and a half a day with at dinner time, and I just don't see how a human being could be doing things that are inimical to the interests of his own progeny.
That's if you take it a centralized viewpoint that Obama is actually running things, has any say in the matter. Okay. He is apparently beholden to the corporations, number one, that got him elected. And those corporations are beholden to perhaps their religion or other influences that we haven't fathomed yet. Okay? And so the reason I mentioned JimStoneFreelance.com is that he postulates that it is a particular religious entity that is causing this.
Wow.
Okay. So,
what do you mean? You're not talking about an actual God type thing. Do you think it's a religion that's controlling? He thinks that there's actually a superpower?
Well, it's
a
either
superpower?
A religion or a state. Okay. Oh. Now, some states, like the Muslim states, are based on their religions. Okay. Right. And the apparent feud between Judaism and Muslim goes back centuries. And there might be something to that is something that should be looked at.
There's a professor up here at UCSC I heard a couple of years ago talking about he's a comparative religion professor, and he's a Muslim. And he's had death threats at the time. And we had Jews and Muslims and Christians in the audience. And apparently, the Quran, which I've read, is not a violent... it does not produce violence in people. It's the hadithas over the centuries, like the parables that were added, caused all of these different sects to arise. And the sects, you know, they just as soon kill each other off as any other exterior. They call that the near enemy, the Shiites and the Sunnis and the the different ones. So it is kind of crazy, but there are it is possible to find Muslims that are not violent and are just as peaceful as any Christian.
Yeah, and I have no argument with that at all. I think that what we're looking at is maniac sects of individual religions. It could be anything from Catholicism to Protestantism to.
But to support the idea, Jim, that it only takes one person, someone in Japan. First of all, I should say that I don't know if you know that American engineers have been involved in Japanese nuclear plants in the beginning, in actually administering them.
This is a GE project,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. Mark I GE's, one of the most supposedly the most dangerous nuclear power plants ever produced, according to the NRC in their first report when they were first formed after the Atomic Energy Commission was decommissioned. But I'm going to say that somebody, I call him Scientist Zero, made a decision to dip into the several tons of pure plutonium that Japan had in storage, in hopes that someday they might be able to manufacture atomic weapons. They decided to mix that pure plutonium with uranium to create what they call MOX fuel. Now that was an absolutely insane decision, because when you do have a meltdown, you're actually putting much more plutonium into the air than you ever would as in a normal sense. It would have been a product of uranium fission, and it went a lot smaller amounts. But they just went ahead and put, and I don't know what the proportion is, half and half. Yeah. But that was an absolutely insane, inhuman decision.
Yes, it's insane and inhuman, just as war is insane as inhuman. And what I'm trying to point out is that we might already be involved in a war between some kind of religious organization that has decided to go all out now. One thing I remember going way back into the late 60s is that the government of the United States had a plan called Continuation of Government. It was called COG, C-O-G. This was a contingency plan on their part that if we were hit by a first-strike nuclear exchange with the Russians, the idea was that we were only going to be at war with the Russians, that they would be able to continue government from underground. So they built a vast caverns-like structures, including a cave for the senators and congressmen to all run down and be able to continue government from underground after the end of the Cold War.
And the IRS, too, I understand.
I suppose,
No, that was one of the big deals.
Yeah, right. So, and that has carried, and that project, since it began in the 60s, had time to mature and be expanded, I think, and we don't really have much of an idea of how much it's expanded.
Yeah.
So these folks have a place to go, and they figure living underground is just as good to them as living above ground. And so I don't think that, in part imputing some kind of a moral sense to somebody that believes that he has a way to circumvent the consequences is too useful. So
I'm lucky I'm 76 years old. That's the way I look at it. But I'm worried about my grandchildren.
I have a grandfather as well, and I worry about my grandchildren. They're 7 and 5 years old, and I had the privilege of being with them on Father's Day. And when you're with children, you can see how delicate they are. That how sensitive they are to even the moods of people of their peers. So during that day, I didn't mention any of this to his parents. So so it's a serious enough topic that I hope if there's any children listening that that they are. Under the supervision and care of their parents. It is a serious issue, and I think we need to figure out a way to, as to each individual, how we're going to deal with it. As a group of people, I would say that any chance that you have to interface or to exchange information with government, this would be a primary issue with you. A government is going to get into. Go ahead.
I've spoken to the Board of Supervisors twice, and my only topic was to emphasize there is no safe level of radiation.
Yes.
And they looked at me like I was a cow.
Yeah.
And I said, well, this is the way that reasoning seems to go. Right now, people in Oakland are drinking milk that is at a safe level. So it's four times higher than it used to be, but it's a safe level. Next day, they're going to drink the milk, and they're going to be drinking another load of it, and so they get safer and safer as time goes on because they keep drinking these safe levels.
Yeah.
And everybody in the audience, when I walked out, I walked out in a huff the second time I did that, and they were smiling at me like, yeah, maybe that's what's going on.
Yeah.
It's safe, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe until it's not safe, you know.
Yeah, right. Right. It seems that the only people, the opportunities that we get, you know, we can talk to the Board of Supervisors. It comes down to what the government is up to is generating revenue. It's all about money.
One of my other things, I didn't just rail about radiation being dangerous. I said, don't believe anything I say. I said this both times, a month apart, two different meetings. Just get a tumor registry started, the same kind of tumor registry which was stopped the day of Three Mile Island's problems.
Yeah.
They had one going for 20 years, and as soon as the problem happened, the governor, the Republican governor, stopped the tumor registry, and I think he was rewarded with it becoming assistant attorney general with Ed Meese.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So what we need to do is have a tumor registry, even if we have to start it ourselves. And if you look up tumor registry, it's a big deal with lots of colleges. It's starting to become a new thing to do with your life. It's a new career.
I'm not sure of the idea there. It's the first I've ever heard of tumor registry.
You'll see hundreds of references to it on the Internet, and there will be colleges which teach people how to start up tumor registries. Seems to me all we need is a couple of telephones that doctors can call and say, hey, I got a tumor, I got this. And then what the resolution is, give them a number. They don't have to identify themselves or their patients. Just say what the thing is and what the prognosis is, and have them promise that they will call in with the same number and tell you how things turned out. That's all we need, and we can start working on the graphs.
Is this the people that come down with tumors that they think might be a result of the radiation? And
I think all tumors, regardless of the cause, is what used to be recorded in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And that was what was stopped the day that we found out that Three Mile Island was a serious accident.
So the registry was stopped, and so if we resume the registry of tumors, this is going to, in other words, if we count the number of tumors and what we're doing, this is going to prove something to someone? Or?
Well, we'll prove whether or not we're spiking.
Yeah.
We're going from a certain platform, some base to a spike because of accidents. We have Nebraska we haven't even talked about, right?
Right.
We talked about it. But 3 inches of increase in the water as of 2 days ago would have inundated the second plant, which is still working.
Yeah.
And that the prognosis was it would flood the pumps and we'd have another problem, just like we have 75 miles north of Omaha.
Yeah.
And the other plant, which is already leaking radiation because they're using the Mississippi, not Mississippi, but the water from the river that's going by, is being used
to cool the
spent fuel, and that's already being sent to the Mississippi.
It's already done. When they're done cooling it, they dump it into the Mississippi.
Yeah. It's the only way they can. They're not pumping. They're just directing.
No kidding. Wow.
So that's what's happening as of about a week ago. So we should start reading radioactivity in Mississippi right now.
Yeah. Well, that's serious.
Yeah.
All right. So, Coral, what you doing?
Well, we could put this piece of music on that I found on the Internet.
Okay, find something. Yeah, let's take a little break. I need a drink.
Okay. This is Opposing Nuclear Power. Music data. Yeah.
plans other than get away. But the party wasn't able to manage the men. But the party is going to stamp on the people.
Underestimated at the darkness of the country. The myth belongs. It's a lie made stiffly. The party had a mean politician and scholar. They think make for a hair at the state.
We should have not changed the measure. But the party renewed a line to the danger. He must protest against the bill. It goes on openly if we don't need them. Who is the beauty coveting mythical interests? Who is it to expand the interests?
Don't be deceived for the lie. Don't be deceived for the myth.
Yeah. Okay. We've got some more music coming up here. Called The Great Atomic Power. Sounds interesting.
Are you ready for the great atomic power? Will you rise and meet your savior in the air? Will you shout or will you cry when fire comes from high? Are you ready for the great atomic power? Well, have you heard this man's invention?
With Jim Ostrowski and Tony Cuspa talking about nuclear power, atomic power, tumor registries, and this is the Tangerine Dream Team show. You're welcome to call in. And you can also give your support by mailing us some love at P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz 95061. Make it out to FRSC and say you heard this on the Tangerine Dream Team show. So, I don't know if you were listening. That last song was about Take It to Jesus. So, I'd like to see y'all a comment on what you think religion or spirituality could add to this debate about what we're going to do.
The idea that we are husbands of Earth's resources, or we're supposed to husband our resources, and I think we're doing a poor job. But I want to mention that Dr. Mitchell here said he looked at sources for Geiger counters, and he found a lot of Army surplus. You can get a Geiger counter for $100. I don't know anything about the sensitivities, but what do you think of that, Jim?
Well, I decided that I wanted... Okay, all right. I needed to have more of an understanding that was provided. A lot of the manuals that came with the Victorines, the Cold War Victorine machines that are available on eBay, didn't provide a schematic, so I'd kind of have to start with scratch. When I looked at the kit ones, since they have a schematic, I can be completely confident of every part in there and eventually understand the operation. So that's an important factor for me to be able to know exactly what's going on with the counter. So I think the Cold War type of detectors are very good. They were built for an environment which is much more contaminated, so they're less sensitive than the ones available with the Geiger tubes that I mentioned here.
Well, I plan on getting one next month, so I was hoping to get something from this program in terms of more direction.
Yeah.
Even to get one for $100 is nothing. To try one, see what it works. Maybe I hope I can take it to you.
Electronic Gold Mine, that's where you can get a kit, and if you need help assembling the kit... you can look us up on burl.com,
www.buryl.com.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I've been great, Shell. I want to ask a question. Is there anything that you can do to prevent the Asian particles in your food from getting into your body, or anything you can do as an individual?
Well, I'm going to go ahead with that.
My comment is going to be facetious, so I'll let Jim handle it.
Okay. Without knowing if there's, if you're going to eat the food or drink the liquid, whatever it is, unless you know ahead of time, if you, you've made some testing to it with either a Geiger counter or a scintillation counter, there you have no way of knowing, no way of preventing it to getting into your system. That's not to say that once it's in your system, you won't eliminate it. You won't breathe. Let's say if you breathe it in, the particle, you can breathe it out as well. But if it somehow lodges in your system and isn't extricated, in particular, my understanding is strontium in milk is the worst because it's attracted to your bone marrow. So what I would do is to look up, you can get on the internet and look up the UC Berkeley Nuclear Engineering website. I believe it's UCB. And they are monitoring, I believe, milk, water, tap water, rainwater, various leafy vegetables. And you can look there and make sure you're not getting any strontium in the milk. Once you drink it, it's there, and the concentration level is what it is. From what I understand, they're saying it's low, but you want as little as possible. So I don't drink milk anymore since this accident, and I think it's better to... err on the side of caution.
Okay, I can riff off
Thank
of that.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I was going to add that the milk, cows eat the grass that's covered with the fallout, and they concentrate it. So milk does concentrate the radiation before you take it in, and then so you don't have to do that. I guess you could go to soy milk. Mm-hmm. Or what I use, rice milk, which is better for human beings anyway. Since we don't develop antibodies against cow's milk. We do develop antibodies, and a lot of people are lactose intolerant for that reason.
Why can't radiation fall into rice fields or something like that?
It can, but for some reason, it's concentrated. A cow is a great concentrator of the fallout. When the Windscale plant in Britain... blew up, they had to just confiscate all of the milk that was produced in the entire downwind area from Windscale. They had an incident which you might have heard about.
Yes,
and I want to recommend a book called We Almost Lost Detroit, which is written, like 90% of it, with information from the Brookings Institute way back when it was relatively neutral, politically speaking. And it tells the story of a nuclear plant test plant that I knew about because I saw it in construction when I lived in Detroit. It was just north of Detroit in Monroe County, and it was called the Enrico Fermi plant. It was a fast breeder plant that used liquid or lithium as a coolant instead of water. So, and they calculated a year later in the Brookings Institute that if the operator had just pressed the button 1/2 second later, it would have blown anyway, and all of the southern 20% of Michigan would have been uninhabitable for 25,000 years because the lithium would have done a massive job. So between Detroit and Chicago, no one would be able to live in a 200-mile swath of southern Michigan. So the book is We Almost Lost Detroit, and they have a hard copy at the Central Library.
Interesting. Well, so we are in a very serious situation, as it appears, and you know, I think we have to start looking at the spiritual implications of this. So what I do every morning is I get up and kind of evaluate how I'm feeling. You know, lately it's been this as a psychological effect where you know, I'm very sensitive to in tune with my. How my body's functioning, you know, how our things are working. We should get in touch with our spiritual nature, our the divine influence on us. Pray. I think that's one important thing. It should be a part of your life. Pray or meditate as you wish. But it's important right now that be as spiritually strong as ever, particularly those of us that have families and be watchful as well.
I have a comment to make. About 2 or 3 times a week, I wake up with a sensation that my lungs are burning before I even think about what might be the cause. Mm-hmm. I have very sensitive lungs and have had since I've done crazy things to them in the construction business. Mm-hmm. But what I also do, which we haven't discussed, is I eat a lot of seaweed, which is supposed to remove all heavy metals from your body, lead, mercury, and hopefully plutonium and whatever.
Hopefully you can get, I hear you about seaweed. You want to make sure you don't get any seaweed from Japan. Okay.
That's right. I heard an interview on Amy Goodman. It was a woman says that they were growing scallops, seaweed, and one other fish product about 75 miles north of the plants that we're talking about. I call them Fukushima. Yeah. And she said they told her not to harvest anything this year.
Really? Yeah.
Her seaweed I definitely don't want, so I'm going to have to start looking for seaweed that is grown south of the equator.
Yeah, if you can. Yeah, I found some Maine seaweed that it's granulated, and you can get it at various local health food stores and natural food stores. And it's in granulated form. You put it on all your food.
How does granulation help remove the plutonium or the other stuff?
Well, eventually it's dehydrated. So, you know, once it gets into your stomach, presumably it gets rehydrated to its original form. So, you know, if you had seaweed, you'd chew it. So if you have the opportunity to get the raw stuff, that's fine too. But I don't think there shouldn't be a problem with that.
I get the 99-cent pack, and I eat one every day. Trader Joe's, they're selling them by the ton.
Are they?
But I haven't decided. I guess I want my Geiger counter so I can check my seaweed.
Okay. Yeah. So, right. Get a Geiger counter, too. So.
We have this other song. Want to hear it?
Sure. Let's hear it.
Okay, this is from Uncle Tupelo called Atomic Power.
There you go.
Fearless man's invention that they call atomic power. Are we all in great confusion? Do we know the time or hour? When a terrible explosion may rain down upon our land, leaving horrible destruction, blotting out the works of man. Are you ready for that great atomic power? Will you rise and meet your savior in the air? Will you shout or will you cry when the fire is from on high? Are you ready for that great atomic power? There is one way to escape. Be prepared to meet the Lord. When the mushroom of destruction falls, there is a shielding sword. He will surely stand beside you, and you'll never taste of death. For your soul will fly to safety and eternal peace and rest. Are you ready for that great atomic power? You rise and meet your Savior in the air. Will you shout and will you cry when the fire is blown out? Are you ready for that great atomic power?
That was Uncle Tubula.
They got this Klieg light on this.
And we're back. Hi, Tony. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Pearl.
Well, in summary of what we've been discussing, it's we were bringing spirituality into the idea that maybe this planet has reached its point of how do we turn back something that's already happened, like the nuclear explosions and. Mainly, what can we do to convince the powers that be to realize how serious it is so we can prevent future and
I think like it was Jim's idea that we're already in a nuclear war. I mean,
yes, essentially, because it looks like what this involves the highest technology that's available, and that would include the software that would enable every nuclear plant to become its a stationary bomb.
Well, when you read We Almost Lost Detroit, you'll find out that Brookings Institution said you would only have to have an opening in the containment building as large as a personnel door to actually eject all of the radiation in the core. Mm-hmm. You don't need to bust the thing down or melt it down like they did. I mean, in Japan, they just blew the entire sphere off, which is funny because the GE Mark I design was sold on the basis of having lighter containment, and therefore it's cheaper than other nuclear power plants.
Really?
And whoever designed the thing to put the nuclear waste above the plant in this building, I'll never know. But I'm a civil engineer, and I've designed plants, and I would never have done anything like that. And you know, you almost have to be designing it for maximum trouble.
Yeah.
When you put the waste up above something that might explode. And the things that were exploding were like when you got the catalytic creation of hydrogen buildup, because of poor venting of hydrogen, and it would explode when it contacted water, I guess. I mean, and there's a special vent that the Mark I had designed for it, but it was made not mandatory, but optional in the 24 plants we have in the United States, 23 of which are still operating, and Yankee is one of those Mark I's. When the AEC was made defunct because it was too political and too military, and the NRC took over, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the first report they said is that they wish they had never licensed the Yankee plant because it's the poorest, most dangerous design they have ever seen, but they went ahead and used it for 30 years anyway. That shows you how much protection we're getting from the NRC. And my idea of the nuclear war scenario is that, having been a weapons builder at Vandenberg Air Force Base, I'm tuned into the fact that it just takes a certain amount of fallout in the air. It doesn't matter how the fallout gets there. It doesn't matter if you have explosions over Moscow and Washington. You would probably have less fallout in the air now if we blew Moscow and Washington off the map. We would be getting lots of fallout from the actual dirt that was thrown up in the air. But as far as the radioactivity is concerned, we would have less than we have in the air now. So I say that we have already experienced a full-blown nuclear war, and the equivalent of 20,000 Hiroshima-sized atomic bombs is now in the air in terms of the fallout.
Yeah, and as I understand it, the nuclear core of an atomic bomb or a hydrogen bomb weapon is only like 25 kilograms. Here we've got several tons. I believe the last estimate I saw was 1,700 tons of highly concentrated and enriched uranium and plutonium in the air.
The actual figures for Three Mile Island, I didn't even know until this crisis happened that Three Mile Island did any melting down.
Yeah.
But they have to finally admit it. And half of the Three Mile Island core disappeared into fallout and became part of the environment inside this 10-foot-thick concrete sphere, which was all eventually metered out to the Susquehanna River.
Wow.
Without anyone knowing about it or being told about it. But that is, you can go up to Walnut Creek, where they have the only large repository of information on all nuclear power plants, right there in Walnut Creek, California. And you can read all the details of this stuff that they've been denying happened, people dying because of accidents at nuclear power plants. All that stuff that's happening has been kept secret. But now they have to open up their books and let people see it.
What is this? Is it a library up there or what?
It's all the records. That's where Daniel Ellsberg went to get a lot of his information.
I see.
After checking individual plants. And he was working for the RAND Corporation in Santa Monica, where he was working when he came out with the white the white papers, or what they call it, the Pentagon Papers. But it's really amazing that people are not reacting, or that our military are not protecting us by giving us at least the truth and measuring hot spots in the country and telling us where. You know, okay, talking about hot spots, when Three Mile Island went, the governor of Pennsylvania said, we don't have to worry about pregnant women or anything, but he secretly moved all of the pregnant women, talked to the doctors, and told all the pregnant women in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, to get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah.
And a lot of them ended up in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And the ironic thing of that is when it did, like I said, I didn't know there was any fallout until just a few months ago.
Yeah.
The hot spot was Hershey, Pennsylvania. That's where most of the pregnant women were, were stationed.
Yeah.
And they had maximum fallout. And the death rate of children in their first year went up four times in the year after Three Mile Island. That's all a matter of record.
And that didn't even break the containment building. I wonder how the radiation actually got out of there.
Well, because the radiation got in. They had 9 foot of water, standing water.
Yeah.
And some people said the actual 10-foot thick sphere was glowing at night. That could be apocryphal.
Yeah.
But anyway, they had the radiation of 1,000 nuclear bombs trapped, and they're ready to get out of the atmosphere. So that when they let the water accept all this radiation, they actually metered it out slowly in the Susquehanna River. And there's all kinds of stories of two-headed goats and six-legged frogs and all kinds of mutated animals that happened. But to this day, most of my friends say that's just crap. It can't possibly be true. Our government would have told us about that.
Sure.
Okay, so how would you like to conclude this discussion?
I still don't have a good sense from Jim as to whether or not it would be a good idea for us all to get Geiger counters and start checking each other out. You know, you can check your friend out, and when it goes off the bat, you can tell him to start arranging his affairs, you know, that he might not last another 2 months. I mean, I was married to a doctor who had to tell people that when they got pancreatic cancer. And I think we're going to get to that point where people are going to get hot. Individual people are going to be hot spots because of human hot spots because of where they live. And because of the lack of information on where they should be going and how they should be living their life.
Oh, well, the one thing that I could add to that is we have a global society where people travel all over. So it's like, I think it will be eventually will become part of the general population where we have people that have been more radiated than others. Now, I don't think that the danger is so much from other people having radiation, you being affected by it directly by being near them.
Right.
But, you know, what we want to look at is the biological uptake of food items, and we have to be very careful. And if you can grow food, that's one thing. Grow it in a greenhouse and store whatever food you can find that's that was produced prior to 311.
Well, if people were pretty hot, you wouldn't want them reproducing necessarily, and they probably wouldn't want to.
Well, we'd hope not. So, you know, it's hard to end this on a really an upbeat note because it doesn't appear to be any real long-term solution to this other than short of some kind of a divine intervention or a miracle. But at least as a human species, we should, I think we should be trying, and we need to get on our local government officials, and that include officers that pull us over for speeding tickets, anyone who will listen that wants to get in our business in order to extract money out of us. Say, isn't this more important? This is a more important issue to you is the safety and health of your family.
And on Earth Day, I had a sign, handwritten sign that I'd made that day, which reported something I forgot to tell you. There is a record of 42,000 extra cancer cases around Three Mile Island that were registered, even though the tumor registry was no longer in existence. Mm-hmm. And they were called unreported increases in cancer. Mm-hmm. And when the people who walked by on this beautiful sunny day on the grass behind the county courthouse really wrinkled their noses and really seemed interested in learning this for the first time. Well, I had only learned it a month earlier because all this stuff has been secret. The way they kept it out of the news is the judges were in cahoots with the government, and they would not allow expert witnesses to testify in courts for 20 years after Three Mile Island. Okay. Then, by the time people got to, and it was hundreds of people were trying to sue the nuclear power plant people, and ironically, all that money that they would get would come from us, because under the Price-Anderson Act, we are the insurance company for all the nuclear industry. So but why they even bother fighting us in court, I don't know. But it's just a game. I mean, they want to win and be the inhuman victors. Yeah. But now they're allowing these things into court, and the information is so old that it's hard to prove that your husband died 10 years ago from something that he ingested as a result of Three Mile Island. Yeah. So often they're losing their cases now by design, the judiciary having helped the situation along.
Because they were able to delay it that long.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to say glad you came, not for the topic necessarily, but it's very important that we did have this going on, because...
it's important for people to realize what's happening, you know.
We don't want to
They're not getting anything from the mainstream news, which I find highly objectionable.
Yeah,
and that's the
we don't
want to
let it
today.
Lie. We don't want to let it go
by. But you're getting it from 101.1. You're getting it from Freak Pirate Radio.
Yeah, this is 101.1 FM. If you have any comments, please call up in the next 5 minutes and let us know. And our number again is 469-3119, or you can send an email to freakradio at frsc at freakradio.org. And I'd like to thank Jim again, Jim Ostrowski.
Thank you, Carl. Glad to be here.
And I'd like to thank Tonikas.
Jeszcze Polska nie zginęła, which means Poland has not yet died. Both Jim and I are from Polish extraction, apparently.
Yeah.
Hey.
That's right. Cool.
That's great. Well, all right. Everyone have a good evening. This has been the Tangerine Dream Team Show. Tune in every week, between 7 and 8. And, and also, you could hear Free the Land from 8 to 10 approximately, Tuesday nights.